And let's go back to Haiti. We're actually spending an hour examining issues in Haiti as they prepare for the presidential election this Sunday. The top priority, clearly, for the incoming president will be to rebuild the country that was devastated after the earthquake in January. It was a tragedy that affected both adults and children alike.
When you come upon a school building that used to be five stories high, 600 children died. And as they're still removing bodies from the rubble, they're burying them directly in what used to be the playground. It certainly is a humbling experience, and it forces all of us to elevate the priority of children in Haiti.
That was Alberto Cavallo. He's the Miami-Dade superintendent of schools, speaking to us on The Takeaway. He'd visited Haiti a month and a half after the earthquake to take a look at the damage to schools there. It's been 10 months there. The education system is still not rebuilt, and we're wondering, what are the steps that need to be taken to reform, to rebuild the educational system in Haiti? Well, to help us answer those questions, we have Marcelo Cabrol with us. He's the chief of the education division at the Inter-American Development Bank, and he's been working closely with a Haitian presidential commission that's in charge of overhauling the educational system in Haiti. Good morning, Marcelo.
Good morning. How are you doing?
And we also welcome back Mallory Thurlow, executive director of the Haiti Foundation Against Poverty. We spoke to her about an elementary school that she helps run in the country of Haiti. Good morning again, Mallory.
Good morning.
Well, Marcelo, maybe you can give us a sense of exactly what the educational system is like, the public education system in Haiti. How many schools are there? How many students and how many teachers?
You have to talk about both the public and non-public, that is to say the private education system, to really discuss education in Haiti. At this point, there's 8,000 schools in Haiti, or there was before the earthquake 8,000 schools, 3 million kids approximately, and 60,000 teachers.
But we don't know how many, we don't have a count on how many are left since the earthquake?
No, we do know that 85% of the infrastructure there was damaged in the areas that where the earthquake actually took place. But what we do know also is that most of the teachers are ready to go back to work, and most of the kids would be willing to go to school. There's a problem now of access, of course.
Are kids not in school in public schools in Haiti right now?
There's probably, according to our calculations, and these, of course, are very rough calculations, there's approximately 1 million kids that are not going back to school.
Because their school was devastated?
The school was devastated, but also there's the economic factor. Parents cannot pay, and this is important, 80% of the supply of schools there is private. That is to say, it requires the payment of fee or tuition, and parents are not able to pay for their kids to go back. At the same time, these schools are not viable without the payment of tuition, so that's the problem.
Well, let me ask you, your organization has a five-year plan that you've come up with this presidential commission, as I understand it, to build 2,500 new schools and train teachers. Is either one of them of a higher priority, or do they just both need to happen in conjunction?
They need to happen together, and that's what we're watching closely, the elections and the results of the elections. We're hoping that the implementation that already started of the plan that the government of Haiti actually approved will happen very, very relatively soon with the new authorities.
Well, Mallory Thurlow, let me ask you, you're still running an elementary school in Haiti, and you said that every day you're in Haiti, you see people who are begging you to take their kids into your school. What do you think is if we had to put something on the list, this is where we start to reform the educational system in Haiti or rebuild it. What is that thing?
I think that schools need to be able to have access to schools. I mean, education is so expensive, and I'm dealing with parents that are only able to feed their children every 2 or 3 days, and so the dream of being able to put their child into a school is just so far beyond reach when they can't even afford to feed them.
Well, let me ask you that, Marcelo Cabrol. What about the kids whose families can't feed them? I mean, once you get these schools built, how do you keep the kids in school? How do you keep them learning when they're hungry?
This is a key issue for the plan. The plan involves two important important interventions on the demand side. And one of them is actually to subsidize the payment of tuition, that is to say, to give the parents and the families a transfer, a cash transfer, actually, by freeing them for paying tuition. So that would allow them to actually use the money for other purposes, such as feeding their kids. The plan also includes some provisions for feeding. It's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be at least enough for them to have an early morning breakfast and be able to work in schools.
Mallory, are you confident that the educational system is going to be a top priority once a president gets elected? Do you think that's what the Haiti is going to focus on?
I'm not sure if it'll be the main focus right up front, because so many people, I mean, over a million people still living in these tent cities, and while it's all great to have education for these children to be learning, but if they're still going back home in conditions that are so violent and they're sick with the disease spreading around, then they're not going to be able to learn very well. So I hope that we can get people moved into safer housing, get them clean water, and the education will be a focus once the people are actually surviving.
That's Mallory Thurlow, Executive Director of the Haiti Foundation Against Poverty. Let me put that question to you, Marcelo Cabrol. You know, I've listened to a lot of political candidates, some of the presidential candidates speak in Haiti, and generally, if they mention education at all, it's along a long list of things they need to get accomplished. It seems to me like it's hoping for a lot to think that rebuilding schools is going to be a priority when people are living in tents.
Look, after the earthquake, if you read the list of priorities of the government, education was also very low on the list. But 3 months after the earthquake, education emerged as an important priority. Just to give you an example, the sector of education is the only sector with a comprehensive plan that's been approved by the Reconstruction Commission in Haiti. I think that I have some hope there that education is going to be back on the top of the list.
Marcelo Cabrol, Chief of the Education Division for the Inter-American Development Bank. Thank you so much. You joined us from Maryland, and we spoke again with Mallory Thurlow. She's the Executive Director of the Haiti Foundation Against Poverty, talking about rebuilding Haiti's schools. All hour we've been focusing on Haiti, not just in the aftermath of the earthquake in January, not just in the midst of a cholera epidemic, but also as they prepare for a very important presidential election on Sunday. We're going to continue to monitor the situation and bring you the news as they developed, of course. If you have a story you'd like to share, give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can leave your comment at thetakeaway.org. You know, turnout is low in Haiti at all times during a cholera epidemic, and when the roads are damaged, it would seem to be even more challenging. I'm Celeste Headley.
And I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. It's The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.